Well, well. We got Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. Sunday, 1 p.m. Heinz Field. Steelers favored by a mere 3 points. That makes it a pick 'em, really, because the home team always gives three. That's all that is, the home team giving three. The Steelers and Bengals are a pick 'em. The Steelers lost last week at home to Vegas when they were favored by 6.5, and now it's a stare down with Cincinnati. Make no mistake, no matter what history might indicate, this is no easy game Sunday. The Bengals don't stink anymore. You got Burrow. He's a great young quarterback. You got Mixon. He's a top five running back. You got Chase. He's a deep threat. You got Tyler Boyd, underrated and legit. The Bengals have some weaknesses. For example, despite all the weapons, their offensive line absolutely stinks. That may sound vaguely familiar. But this game Sunday, it's a crapshoot. If the Steelers lose, their season is in trouble. It's going to get late, real early. This is the Mark Madden Show. Today, live from Rivers Casino on the north side, right in the sports book. Come on down, place a bet, grab a drink, and enjoy the Mark Madden Show 3 till 6 p.m. right here at the Rivers Casino Sportsbook. I work heel. I work stiff. If you want to talk to me, dial 412-333-WXDX, or you can do what the cool kids do and follow me on Twitter at Mark Madden X. We don't have the Steelers' official injury report just yet, but T.J. Watt said he's done enough this week where the door is open for him to play. What that means exactly, I don't know. When T.J. was pressed, he really didn't explain. But I got to say, as important as this game is, you got to be careful with T.J. Watt and the whole groin gang, because that's an injury that can very easily go from bad to worse, as in long-term, if you bring a guy back even a smidge too early. I almost forgot that Mike Hilton was on the Bengals. Maybe he'll put Ben out with a big hit from the blitz nickel. There would be some irony there. I want to wish a happy birthday to Mean Joe Green, probably the greatest Steeler of them all. It's the 75th birthday for number 75, and I have a story to tell, a little personal tale about my encounter with Mean Joe Green. I will recount a little bit later this hour. Don't forget, on Sunday, I'll be at Celebrations in Imperial for another great Steelers viewing party. That's Celebrations in Imperial, and the first 10 patrons to show up wearing a Juju Smith-Schuster jersey, just like I like to wear at these dues, will get a licensed Steeler hat. I don't sense concern about this game Sunday against Cincinnati. I don't sense great concern by the hoi polloi, or maybe all y'all just whistling past the graveyard. T.J. Houshmandzadeh, he's the former Bengals wide receiver, he said that Juju Smith-Schuster is the Steelers' third best receiver and that Juju won't get more than $10 million per when he hits free agency after this season. First off, I'm not sure Juju's even going to get 10 mil. He only got 8 mil this year on a one-year deal. But otherwise, Houshmandzadeh is absolutely right. That's how the rest of football sees Juju. That's how the NFL teams see Juju. It's a guy who had to come crawling back to Pittsburgh because nobody else wanted him, and he took about half of what he thought he was going to get on a deal about four times as short as what he thought he was going to get. But boy, all y'all overrate Juju. Pittsburgh overrates Juju. He's a number three, period. Houshmandzadeh also criticized how the Steelers have let their offensive line go to crap. And it is crap. and it's going to kill them this season just like we thought it might. That Steelers offensive line is who we thought they were. But how did you know Ponce and DeCastro were both going to quit? Both those guys retired young. How did you know you'd have to turn over the whole offensive line, every starter, inside of 13 months? In retrospect, though, it was insanity to draft Najee in the first round and not a defensive lineman. In fact, they probably should have drafted a defensive lineman 1-2. Taking Freiermuth, the tight end from Penn State, yeah, he's pretty good, and he makes you think of Heath Miller. But the last thing they really needed, underline that word, needed, the last thing the Steelers needed is a tight end that doesn't block. So should have gone 1-2 on the O-line, unless you subscribe to the Matt Williamson theory that the Steelers are looking past this year to next year with all the cap space, and that this season is a bridge year, which may have been planned and it may be happening organically. We got Penguins camp. Sid is skating. He's just not wristing after that surgery. Hextall, the GM, he said Geno's going to be out at least 2 months, but A, I bet it's longer, and B, didn't we already know that? Radim Sahorna is the big hope at center with Sid and Geno out because he's big and he scored a few nice goals last season, like literally a couple, period. That reminds me of the bad years right before the Penguins got Sid. And a guy like Lassie Prieta, remember him? Prieta had like 5 or 6 decent games, and everybody said, hey, that Prieta might be good. And he wasn't, and he was back in Denmark or wherever before you knew it. Zahorna has good hands for a guy 6'7", but his hands ain't that good, period. Pierre-Olivier Joseph, the young defenseman, the former first-round pick who came over from Arizona in the Kessel deal, he was paired on defense with Chris Letang today. Hey, that's what I might do, but you still got Dumoulin, Matheson, and Pettersson, and you know Dumoulin is going to pair with Letang because that's what Letang wants, and it is a very proven combination. So Pierre-Olivier Joseph is blocked more efficiently than the Steelers' offensive line could do. Turning now back to the Steelers, Minka Fitzpatrick has to have a big game Sunday. Minka Fitzpatrick has just got to do more, period. It's tough when he mostly has to play center field and keep guys from getting behind the Steeler defense, although Ruggs of the Raiders did that anyway this past Sunday. And it's even tougher on Minka when Cincinnati has a legit deep threat like Jamar Chase. But Minka had that big run of turnovers when he first got to Pittsburgh a couple years back after that trade with Miami. And that's all dried up. Minka hasn't had an interception in 8 games. He's only forced one fumble all last year and only recovered one fumble in the 2020 season. Minka isn't making plays. And if you want to be the highest paid safety in football, as Minka does, you can't just play center field and keep the top on. You gotta make plays. You don't pay stars to do okay. TJ Watt got $80 million guaranteed, so he has to make big plays every game now, and he will be and should be criticized if he doesn't. If you make quarterback money, you gotta do quarterback things. If you get $80 million guaranteed, like Watt or whatever it is Minka's going to want, you got to impact the result in positive fashion as often as not. In fact, more often than not. Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore quarterback, he reportedly hurt his hip doing that flip into the end zone when he scored a touchdown. Jackson missed practice. Then it was reported he was sick, which means he hurt his hip doing that touchdown flip. Okay, I got the injury report here, but it is hard to read. Okay, Ben did not practice. Game status isn't listed. Deontay Johnson is out. Smart coaching by Tomlin, have him out there on the field for that meaningless catch in a meaningless situation. Hayden was a full participant. That looks good. Oh, wait, Ben was a full participant today. I'm sorry. I looked at the wrong column, so it looks like he's going to play. Devin Bush, full participant. He's going to play. Alex Highsmith is out. T.J. Watt, as we said earlier, limited. His status is questionable, which means probably not. Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. So much on the line already. Week three, who'd have thought? The Steelers got to run the ball better, but they can't. Ben's going to have more time, but he won't. Tomlin talked about using Derek Watt at fullback to block, but Tomlin won't. I kind of like the idea of Gentry as a blocking tight end, but that won't happen either. Harris was a luxury pick. Like I said, so was Freiermuth, probably. Should have taken two offensive linemen in the first two rounds of the draft. The offensive line coach, Clem, that's a bad hire. So was Matt Canada as the offensive coordinator. You know why they were hired? Because they were already hired. They just moved up the depth chart a little bit. They were cheap, and they were already there. Those are not the kind of hires a great organization makes. But, hey, Ben's going to play. Bad pick at all. Going to climb down off the cross and light it up. I can feel it. Ben is his best when he's martyred. 412-333-WXDX, the number to call. We got Craig Wolfley with the best football talk in town at the bottom of the hour. We got Tim Benz at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. It's Mark Madden live from the River Sportsbook here on 105.9 The X.
Injured? Call Edgar Snyder and Associates, where there's never a fee unless we get money for you.
I think you're on to something.
The X at 105.9.
From the Athletic, Mark Cavalli on Twitter. Steelers rule outside linebacker Alex Highsmith out for Bengals game, and outside linebacker T.J. Watt is questionable. Questionable listing for Steelers usually means he will play, but I think in this case it can go either way for Watt. My prediction is that Watt will try to play and come up lame right quick. This puts a little bit of pressure, gives opportunity to Jameer Jones, who is the next man up, an edge rusher. At some point you get your chance, and at some point you prove you belong in the league or that you do not, and the time may be nigh for Jameer Jones. Even if Watt does play, Jones is going to get his share of snaps. Today is the 75th birthday of Mean Joe Green, the Steelers legend, the four-time Super Bowl champion. The team turned around when it drafted Mean Joe Green, and I believe Joe to be the greatest Steeler of all time. So I want to tell a story about my encounter with Mean Joe Green when I was a kid. I was, 11 or 12 years old. It was very early in Joe Green's career. And I very rarely went to Steeler games as a kid, but my mom got tickets. And in the fourth quarter, I snuck down to the runway at Three Rivers where the Steelers players entered and left the field. And I was kind of watching the game from there. And Joe Green got hurt. And he was real beat up, just taking a pounding. And he was walking off the field. And I was standing there by the runway, and I was drinking a Coke. And when Joe walked past me, you know, I'm a kid. I say, Joe, I think you're the greatest. I hope you're okay. I think you're going to make this team great. And he just kind of shrugged and grunted and walked past me. So he offered Joe Green my Coke. And he didn't say where, but he took it. And he kept walking. And he drank the Coke. But I thought he was just through with me, so I said, okay, well, see you around. And when I was just about to go back up in the stands, I'm at the entrance to the tunnel, and Joe Green yells to me, hey, kid. And I turned around, and Mean Joe Green called me a jackass. That's my Mean Joe Green story. Happy 75th birthday to Mean Joe Green. I am down at the Rivers Casino Sportsbook. We got all the games on all the TVs. You know what they should do some Saturday? They should bring me down here for Premier League football. That'd be awesome. Liverpool and Brentford tomorrow. Come on, you Reds. The Ryder Cup's on down here. U.S. leads 3-1 in the very early going, but I don't give a rat's ass about none of that because, A, golf is not a team sport, and, B, you are not representing your country when you golf. If you want to represent your country, carry an M16 in a foreign country. Don't carry a 9-iron wherever the frig this is. I saw Guns N' Roses last night at Columbus, Ohio, at the Ohio State Hockey Rink. Played 3.5 hours, almost too long, but it was definitely a great show. I've seen Guns N' Roses 9 times since the semi-reunion, since Slash and Duff came back on board, and I've been very pleased every time. A lot of interesting games around the NFL this weekend. Like I said, Steelers, and these are all lines at the River Sportsbook here. Steelers are favored by 3 over Cincinnati. That's just the home team spread. Steelers have won 11 of their last 12 against Cincinnati. They failed to cover, though, the last 5 times they've been favored against Cincinnati. So, very interesting game. How about Tampa Bay at the L.A. Rams? Tampa Bay favored by 1 on the road against L.A. Going to be a great game. L.A. Chargers at Kansas City. Chargers 6.5-point underdogs. I smell upset with that game. Green Bay and San Francisco at San Fran. San Fran favored by 3.5. Let's see how Green Bay does before hosting Pittsburgh next week. Up next, we got Craig Wolfley. It's the best football talk in town. You can hear it only on 105.9 The X. Oh, wait, there's more. I'm giving away Steeler tickets. Isn't that great? Let me find my sheet here with the information. Call in now. Be caller number 19 for Juju. Caller number 19, win tickets to the Steelers and Bengals this Sunday at Heinz Field. Caller 19, win a pair of tickets for Steelers in Cincinnati at 1 p.m. Sunday. I'm Mark Madden, 105.9.
It's Colin Cowherd. Here's what's trending for iHeart Sports Network, presented by Mercedes-Benz.
A big weekend of college football is on tap. Pitt will kick things.
The robe, the hair, the woo!
The X at 105.9.
It's time for the best football talk to be heard anywhere in Pittsburgh. Joining me now, he is the Steelers' all-time great on the offensive line. You can hear him on game day doing analysis on DVE. He is Craig Wolfley. Wolf, did you ever have a groin injury? That seems to be the issue of the week. Everybody's got a groin injury. How about you?
Yeah, I had one of those. It was not fun. Matter of fact, it was painful from the hip to the knee. It was black and blue, and you know what? I understand what those guys are feeling. It's very uncomfortable.
Well, it's a very inexact science, too, in terms of a timetable for healing. And T.J. Watt said today the door is open for him to play Sunday. He's listed as questionable, but it's week 3. It strikes me that you got to be careful with that sort of injury.
No question about it. The problem is, and, you know, back in my day, it was different because it's like, well, you know, you can just open up another can of player, add water, and you're okay. But T.J. Watt is not just another can of player that you add water to and get out there. You want to make sure this is not a chronic thing. And because his ability, his fast twitch is so fast, those are the type of soft tissue injuries that can really be damaged when you go faster than your body can stand at that point. I don't think I ever went faster than my body could stand unless I fell down the hill somewhere. But other than that, you know, certainly that's something you got to be careful with a guy like TJ this early in the season especially.
Now, we got to get that running game going, Wolf. And Mike Tomlin talked about maybe using Derek Watt at fullback to block. Is that a viable option to goose the running game?
You know, I really believe so, and I felt this way for a long time, Mark. Look, I come from the era of fullbacks, and I understand the new era of passing the ball and, you know, taking one receiver off, having a fullback, that sort of thing. But look, there's a lot of things that Derek Watt is capable of doing. You can line him up at fullback. You can motion him to an H-back. You can use him from the H-back, meaning off the line of scrimmage like a tight end, but on the counter tray where he can be the trailer and slam guy on the counter tray. You can take this guy and also put him out wide in a pass, pass route. He's able to do a lot of things, and best of all, he can lead on some of the linebackers that are up there. And a Logan Wilson and a Jermaine Pratt are made the order for a guy like a Derek. You know, he's a thick neck, got a neck roll, comes in. He doesn't squat at the line of scrimmage. He tries to run through and eviscerate guys on the second level. So I think that's one way to jumpstart it. And another way is also with a two tight end, kind of two back look, you have 22, 21 personnel, what have you. Little adjustments, little wrinkles that might just create a little difference in leverage. But I know one thing, you don't want to get too way out there because you want to simplify. Because right now for the young guys up front, part of the problem is getting that there's a lot of pulling and so forth, and guys aren't getting the proper angles and getting their heads in front. And it's just, I got to just encourage the folks, say, you got to give these guys time. They're all young. Four-fifths of that offensive line are newbies. Two of the four are rookies. There's a rookie back. So there's a lot of stuff that moving parts that's going on for them. And it needs a little bit of time to be able to get this thing kicked into gear.
Well, in that vein, you mentioned the double tight, which I love. What about using right. Zach Gentry as a blocking tight end? He may be the best of the bunch at tight end when it comes to blocking.
There's no question about it, Mark. You're spot on. Look, 6'12", as Eric Ebron called, and I love that. You know, all 6'12" of Zach Gentry has shown he's capable of blocking. And let's face it, he's got to have pretty decent hands as a former quarterback. I'm not saying he's the greatest route runner. I'm not saying he's as strong a threat as Freiermuth or Ebron. But you know what? He's got some good hands. He's big enough. He's got some Matt Spaeth-like drive blocking ability, which has come over a period of years if you watch his development, because he was very non-physical when he got here. He's pretty darn physical now when you see him out there. So you watch this young man and see what he can do with a Freiermuth, and you think to yourself, boy, if you can get a little bit of push, if you can get a little bit of a run blocking going, the way these linebackers suck up on play action, man, the middle comes open, and a guy like Freiermuth, who's got, what, five? He's 5 for 5 over the middle with a long of, 25 or something like that. This kid can do damage over the middle, and I really like the idea of too tight and getting after it a little.
Wolf, run blocking is, you know better than anybody, is about imposing your will, right? How do you get these guys to better impose their will?
What you've got to do is make sure that when you run these outside zones, and this is the difficulty, Mark. We didn't, in my era, outside zones were not viewed with, we were a gap blocking, trapping team. That's what we were. We're straight power blocks and stuff. When you get on these zones, they become very non-definitive as to do you have this guy or you don't when you're on a track. Sometimes it takes a little while. If I'm following you, you're running towards the sidelines, and you go by one guy, all of a sudden he's in my face, or he gets behind me, and the guy behind me's got to pick him. It's one of these things where there's a little bit of gray in it. And the more you run those outside zones, the better you'll be in knowing what your blocking radius is. So you understand what the guy ahead of you is going to do. Just as you understand, like back in my day, Ray Penny and I played next to each other side by side for a number of years. I knew what he was going to do on pass protection, where we were going to man it, whether we were going to area. I just knew Ray and how he did things. Same thing in the run blocking. You've got to know whether the guy ahead of you is going to take that guy who maybe he's in his track, maybe he's not, but you got to be prepared. You got to see it. And that takes time. Now, the other problem with that is while they're taking time trying to get this run blocking fixed, you've got a thoroughbred like Najee Harris who, you know, I'm sure he wanted to go out there in Buffalo and he wanted to rush for 100 yards. I'm sure he wanted against Vegas 100 yards. Well, it's been a little bit tougher sledding than maybe what he imagined or anybody imagined because of the fact that you've got young bucks on the offensive line who are trying their best to get the job done, and you got some, you know, there's some gray areas. Well, after a couple of hits that you take in the backfield, you start to second guess yourself. You're like, you kind of juke to left, right, and then you're not sure which way to go because you're pressing so hard, and you forget to take the confidence in your line and say, I'm going to follow these guys and press the hole. So you've got a combination of factors that kind of line up sometimes. One of it is the young guys are unsure of what their track is and who they got, in the second half is you also have a running back who I know is going to be a great player. Everybody can see the greatness that is in him, but he's got to be able to just relax, don't press, be himself, and all this stuff is going to surface through the God-given natural talents and attributes he's got.
We're talking to Craig Wolf. He's brought to us by New Flow Men's Health. Wolf, I love Ben Roethlisberger's interviews because every once in a while he fools me with a curveball. And he said that the Steelers don't run no huddle anymore. I could swear I've seen a few occasions this year where they ran plays without a huddle. What's going on there?
Well, it's how you define no huddle, okay? Do you define no huddle as that series of we're going to start the game or start the second half with a slate of plays that we have specially designed full of code words, and this is our no huddle? Or do you, you know, you have also got the hurry up, which is, okay, maybe I'll call it at the line of scrimmage, you know, instead of like as we're running from play to play and you're just calling code words. Now you got the hurry up, but you also have where he's able to look, listen, and go up what the coach calls. So there's really kind of two different things going on there. And I understand probably in Buffalo, I wouldn't think you'd even think about having a hurry up offense because in Buffalo with 70, 80,000 Buffalonians going just bonkers. I would imagine it'd be very, very hard to run any sort of no huddle. But against the Vegas Raiders in your home stadium, yeah, I would think you'd have a slate of, and maybe they had some, but not enough. I do know that if you check, what is it, Pro Football Research, one of them joints, they credit the Steelers with having run 11 no huddle plays. So they've done some, but those might have been just, you know, end of the half, that sort of thing. So that's the best I can give you on that right now.
How good are the Bengals, Wolf, the opponent Sunday? They got some great weapons, I know that, but are a bit flawed otherwise.
Well, they are indeed in the sense of, well, they're struggling just as the Steelers' offensive line has struggled a little bit. Their offensive line has struggled too. And they got some big boys, big beef eaters up there, but they're having problems. Now, they did have a 100-yard rushing game in their opener. They did rush for over 100 yards against, I believe it was the Mini Vikes. Yes, but they lost to the Bears and didn't rush very well. You know, just like, you know, with Ben. Ben got hit a lot last week. Well, just Joe Burrow's been hit, nine times? He's been in two games, he's been sacked nine times. And he got hit like 10 times on the
quarterback. Yeah, a lot of knockdowns, too. And then he threw the three consecutive interceptions as well.
Yes, but here's the key for him. He threw those three consecutive marks, and how does a kid like that have the temerity and the strength of mind to come back and be able to position his team in a position to win the game at the end of the game? He still completed almost 70% of his passes and had a quarterback rating of, I think, it was over 90. I mean, it tells you something about his mental strength is what I'm trying to say. So this kid here, he may be a second-year guy, not even a full second-year guy because with all the knee injury and everything. But think about it. I mean, you know, he's coming into this second year and doing a pretty darn good job for not playing that many games last year, coming off a pretty severe knee injury, as I understand it.
You mentioned Mixon. Of all the Bengals' weapons, Wolf, he's the one that worries me the most because, God forbid, the Bengals get a lead, and then he kind of, you know, makes the game shorter. I think he's real class.
You know what? He's interesting to watch. He runs the stretch well. He's got some power. He's got some shakeability. But they'll also put him out at the line of scrimmage all by his lonesome on one side and have him out there. And they'll throw a quick, you know, now route to him where Burrow takes a snap and throws it out to him out on the wing. And he's out there maybe 10 yards, 5 yards from the sideline. That's a lot of room for the defensive guy to have to gobble up that ground and get after him. If he misses that, you know, it can look like that thing out in Philly, you know, when Trey Norwood missed the guy out there. It could be that bad, but thus far he hasn't sprung it. But that's something you got to be aware of. His pass-catching ability, very good. His running ability, like you're talking about, you don't want him to shorten the game. That guy, yeah, he's capable of shortening the game.
They got Ja'Marr Chase, the rookie who's a legitimate deep threat. What's Minka's job in this game? Does he try to make plays and ball hawk, or does he just have to keep the top on that Steelers defense?
You know, with this kid here, it's going to be interesting to see how they do this because, you know, this kid's already gotten touchdown catches of 50 and 42 yards. I mean, they've gone bombs way. He's averaging 22 yards a catch. Gadzooks, I mean, now he's had drop problems. He's dropped the ball a number of times in preseason. Hasn't been so much since the regular season started, but he does get the case of the, or get, you know, a little pandemic of oops every now and then. Minka's got a, obviously, anytime he's to that side or wherever they put Minka on the back end, you've got to keep the lid on, as Mike Tomlin likes to say. But at the same time, I think with Joe Haden hopefully back and doing, you know, he's all healthy and everything like that, it's going to be a little bit different. They're going to be able to do some things with Minka. Maybe that, as Mike said, maybe, or Keith Butler said, maybe I shouldn't have called that play where Minka was in no man's land in between Darren Fuller, I'm sorry, Darren Waller and the long ball guy, Henry Ruggs. So, that might be, you know, that's a coaching decision. We got to see. I like the fact that you got Minka in various places because I think he creates more problems and more positions than he does if you just put him on the back end. But then again, when you have a guy like Ja'Marr Chase, who's, you know, so very good deep, you might want to think about him, you know, anytime putting him at the back end, covering the back end.
Well, that's why I feel bad for Minka, because he's between a rock and a hard place, Wolf. You want him to make plays, but you can't let guys get behind you. And he's so good, you kind of count on him to do both. And I thought in the Vegas game, maybe he was asked to do a bit too much.
Well, that may well be. You know, we have to look at that. You kind of got to see and say, was that spot duty with Akella Witherspoon, who's just, you know, new to the team a couple weeks, and drawing a guy like Henry Ruggs? Let's face it. 4.27 mark is ridiculously fast. 4.27 is just, it's like, it really is almost hypersonic in the world of NFL. And anybody would have trouble matching strides with that guy out there. And certainly having Minka be able to be in a position where he's looking at Darren Waller underneath and then at the same time trying to keep an eye on Ruggs, that's almost impossible. The only thing that makes it slightly credible is the man they put in that position, which is Minka Fitzpatrick. And those special Minka moments, you sit there and go, you know, I have a tendency to bet on Minka more than on him making the play rather than not making the play, because that's what the evidence has shown us thus far in Minka's play.
What went wrong in that Vegas game, Wolf? Because I got to tell you, what I took away from that game as much as anything, Vegas is pretty good, maybe a bit better than I thought.
No question about it. And I think number one, the biggest first thing I take away is that when TJ Watt went out, there was a lot of rush that went out with him. TJ is one of those guys, and you've heard some of the players this week describe it. I think Cam Hayward talked about it. He's one of those guys when the quarterback, if you watch a Derek Carr with TJ Watt in there and without, there's a clock that exists that has TJ Watt in it and one without. And the one with it, Carr is getting rid of the ball more. He's more inaccurate. He's, you know, he's just not, he's more antsy. He's not settling down. When TJ Watt's not in there, the clock is taking its time. It's a little bit longer. And it's one of those situations where because TJ is so very good, like Minka is on the back end, TJ on the front end, if you look at his stats, number one, everything goes up at Heinz Field. A lot of probably the crowd noise, I would imagine. But the other thing about it is, everything in the completion percentages, the rush percentage, the quarterback's rating, everything goes down when TJ Watt is in there rushing, and it goes up when he's not in there. Number one, is so big a part of the coverage. But at the same time, you know what? Like in Buffalo, the rush was helping the back end as much or more than the back end was helping the rush. Against Vegas, you needed the back end to help more because the rush was being depleted by bodies being lost. So you've got to come to some mixed sort here where you've got good back end working, you got good front end working, you get the rush, you get the coverage, and everything's going to be all right. Part of that, getting that done, is going to be time of possession. You've got to be able to win the time of possession with Cincinnati, and this is something I think the Steelers have not done in either game.
Well, if you are my number one source for football protocol, so I am taking your word on this as law. Is it a big deal when a lineman doesn't pick his quarterback off the ground after he gets sacked or knocked to the turf? Because it became a big deal this week.
Yeah, it's more of a protocol of a new modern era. You know, one of the things about, you hated to pick up Terry Bradshaw because, you know, he might fill you with a few unkind words as you're picking them up. You know, the fact of the matter is that was something that really started, and it's not that you didn't help a Bradshaw or a Franco Harris up, but it really started with Mark Bruner back in the 90s, I believe it was, And then, it, you know, it just kind of picked up.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He was the first guy to do it all the time. And it kind of got passed on to Pouncey most recently.
Yes. And it just became this thing in the room that you do. So, yes, protocol says in terms of today's evolution in the offense and protocol on the field, you go help your quarterback up, you go help your backup, you go help your wide receiver up. You do all those things. In my day, it wasn't so much about that as it was making sure you get around the ball. You know, for instance, Tunchilkin and I, you know, God bless my brother, we always had a bet every year who would make the most tackles on an interception. You know, because you're covering, literally, that's it. You know, we wanted to win that, okay? I can make more tackles than you. He says he can make more tackles. So we would have that bet for dinner, and, of course, at the end of the year, we'd tally it up. But that's the way it was. You covered the ball, and because back in the day, you could pick guys off the pile. So you got guys standing around and, you know, being jerks or something. You had every right to go exact little frontier justice, maybe a sheriff the pile, as we used to call it. So it's a little different evolution in football.
And finally, Wolf, today is Mean Joe Green's 75th birthday. I think he may be the greatest Steeler of them all. Your career and his career overlapped for a couple seasons. I bet he was no fun to practice against. What are your stories of being out there with Mean Joe?
You know, Mark, you and I are going to have to sit down and break bread over that. There are so many stories, but I will tell you there's a couple quips. You know, Joe Green was magnificent as a leader. He was unparalleled. When Joe Green spoke, he literally could stop a room. And I'll never forget my rookie year when we lost 45-34, I believe it was, on Monday Night Football to the then Oakland Raiders, the hated Oakland Raiders. It was unbelievable. We go in the locker room, and Joe hated a couple of things. Number one, he hated losing a game by stupidity. And we lost that game through some stupidity. He hated losing a game by penalties. We lost that game due to a number of penalties. And he hated losing to the Oakland Raiders. So I was in the locker room, new to kind of like post-game loss sort of, you know, protocol, how you conduct yourself. I'm pulling my pads off. I pull them up over my head. And all of a sudden, there is this crack and boom, a rock, and it hit a wood, and it broke or something. And I was stuck because my jersey was so tight. And I couldn't get my head out of the shoulder pads. So I kind of bent forward, if you can imagine, looking out the neck hole where your head goes in your shoulder pads with your jersey still over it and stuck. And I'm looking around, and I see this guy standing. It's Joe Green standing in the doorway of the locker room. And that boom exploded, and everybody turned and looked, and the room fell silent. And Joe just stood there and said, you know, it's a little too deep and happy here in this room. And it got as quiet as it is church. And everybody went about their business and left. You know, but that's what Joe Green was. He was the consummate leader. I could tell you story after story after story. But the whole thing you have to understand, he was the greatest player I've ever been around. He was the greatest leader I've ever been around. So I was blessed to be in that locker room at that time.
Wolf, great stuff, great football talk. Enjoy the Bengals game, and we will do it again next week.
Thank you, my friend. I'll talk to you then.
That's the great Craig Wolfley. He is brought to you by New Flow Men's Health. We got Tim Benz at the top of the hour. I'm at the Rivers Casino. Stop on by. Check out the Mark Madden Show every Friday during football season from 3 till 6 p.m. on 105.9 The X.
iHeartRadio brings you Global Citizen Live, a moment heard around the world. Tomorrow, the biggest artists on the planet unite with world leaders to demand...
Talk about Marc-Andre Fleury. Pay attention, dumb skull, and talk.
The X at 105.9.
Double M on the X live from Rivers Casino. Here till 6 o'clock. Got Tim Benz in just a few moments. Deontay Johnson and Alex Highsmith are definitely out for the game Sunday. TJ Watt is questionable. Looks like everybody else of consequence is good to go. I got to tell you, though, the Steelers coaches, in particular Mike Tomlin, should be berated soundly for having Deontay out there on the last play of that game against Vegas. The game is unwinnable, literally unwinnable, and you throw a pass to Deontay and he hurts his knee and he's out. That's inexcusable. I think Tomlin should have been fired a few years ago, but a stupid decision like that just exacerbates that opinion, because that's beyond stupid. That is as dumb as it could possibly friggin' get. And now Deontay's unavailable for this game. And who knows for how long moving forward. As I've been saying, Joe Mixon's going to be a problem. Unlike Najee Harris, Mixon can gain yards running behind a crappy offensive line, which Cincinnati also has. If Cincy gets the lead, Mixon can shorten the game. And mark my words, Ja'Marr Chase is going to catch a long touchdown. Write it down. You heard it here. And as I mentioned earlier, it's cliche to say, but with a guy like Highsmith out or whoever out, the Jabronis got to step up. It's their opportunity. Guys like Jahmyr Jones and edge rusher and all those DBs. Yo, do you belong in the league or not? Up next, just 30 seconds away, going to talk to Tim Benz about Steelers and Bengals here on 105.9EX.
That's it. Now we're totally going to rock. Oh, my God. Call your friends. Caw-caw.
Shout out to Shaler. Don't think I've